Hey everyone, this is Andy, better known as Love Retro BTW on Twitter, X, Threads, IG, and Cafe BTW on TikTok and YouTube. A quick update that the Cafe BTW podcast is taking a very long hiatus, but I still have something really amazing to share with you. We have a fantastic retro gaming community on Twitter X, where we've crossed well over 2,000 passionate members. And if you're a lover of retro gaming, this is the perfect place to share your content, showcase your pickups, or just chat about your favorite old school games. To dive into nostalgia and become a part of the thriving community, click in the show notes on the Cafe BTW link tree or go right to my Twitter X profile on Love Retro BTW. And now, without further ado, gear up for another sensational episode of the Gamers Week Podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week Podcast.
It's one of my favorite parts of watching the award shows over the years is watching the veins pop out of Jeff Keighley's head as he tries to maintain that fake smile while somebody is speaking into his mic about Bill Clinton. And I love it. I love watching Jeff Keighley try to keep his composure when that happens. So I guess the real question is, are they beefing up security because they truly think it's a risk or just because Jeff got pissed off?
I think the latter. Yep.
We have to keep me safe, people.
Right.
Oh, we're never getting invited to the Game Awards ever. So I recently developed fissured tongue. Do you guys know what that is?
Yes,
I imagine it's a split in your tongue.
Yeah, basically it's little splits down your tongue. Mm-hmm. Well, I basically just woke up last month with it and it's still here. So when I went to the dentist, asked the hygienist, I was like, you know, what do you think? And she says, oh, I don't know. Let me ask somebody else. So she snags another hygienist who's walking past and says, hey, how good are you with tongues?
Depends on who's asking.
The hygienist says, excuse me? And she's like, tongues, how good are you with tongues? She gets kind of quiet. She's like, are you asking me how good I am with my tongue? And I'm just sitting over in the chair. I'm just dying. And then eventually the hygienist like understands what it sounds like she's asking. And she's like, no, I just want you to come look at this.
Come look at this.
Every HR conversation starts with something like that.
Are you good with your tongue?
Haven't had any complaints yet.
It's like, what?
Are you ready to start this? Episode 9-9.
We got 99 episodes, but a problem ain't one. You liked it.
A little bit. Yeah, I did.
Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, the worst, and the weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 99. Today is Wednesday, November 29th, 2023. My name is Ryan, aka Retro Game Brews, and I have with me two fantastic, wonderful, beautiful co-hosts, the first of which is a man who hates the sun and everything it stands for, even though it's remaining completely still. Donnie G, how you doing today?
The sun has its moments. We are not bitter enemies. So,
see, and you were telling that story, and in my head, it was like the sun from Mario 3.
There you go.
Just spinning around and moving left to right. Yep.
With that angry face on it, out to get you.
See, it does do it.
And next up, I have a woman who is always last to know on what we're doing for Thanksgiving dinner, but that's okay. She's got her mashed taters ready. Blue Williams. Blue, how you doing today?
You know, I'm staying in my lane. It's simpler there. And I make some damn good mashed potatoes, so it's all good.
Taters, master.
What's taters?
Potatoes.
All right, on that note, why don't we jump into our reviews, reactions, and requests for the week.
Smoothest segue ever.
Absolutely. Up first up is Jambers Cambers.
It says, all around great podcast, family friendly with jokes for the grown-ups as well. This is one of the best news podcasts out there with amazing host chemistry and fun guests. Thank you.
Thanks, Jambers Cambers.
Thanks, Jambers.
Next up is Pierce's and Company said, I'm an 80s baby and this podcast seems right on the spot. I love all the retro feel. Super dope.
What spot would that be?
If you have to ask,
you can't afford it.
And lastly, from Darkwing J says, Gamers Week, I enjoyed every one of the 3,213 minutes I spent with you in 2023. Thanks, hashtag Spotify Wrapped. Wow.
That's a lot of minutes. Hey, Ryan the math nerd, how many hours is that?
Oh, crap. 300 divided by 6, carry the 2, fuck, I can't think right now. I've had the long day.
He's calculating.
It's like 54-ish hours.
It's 53.55. You were so close.
There we go. Okay.
You were so close.
Yeah, perfect. All right. So that's like a full week of work plus some. So he's getting overtime. So thank you, Darkwing J. Also, special thanks to at Fernley Flynn, Keith Foster, and Johnny Boombot, and anyone who else we missed posting about Gamers Week in your Spotify Wrapped tweets. Super, super awesome. We actually had a hell of a year. We doubled our follower count. We are the top podcast for 400 plus people. We are the top 5 podcasts for 640, and we're a top 10 podcast for 690 folks out there. Which is super, super awesome.
Sorry, what was that last number?
69, dudes!
And now, it's time for the
Hello, Donnie G. Retro. At last we meet, for the first time, for the last time.
Hello there. What? Did I say something wrong? I mean, you did use a line from Dark Helmet.
Never mind. I know why you are here. You wish to be my apprentice. You wish to be a pole master.
Well, that all depends on how much you charge.
Money is of no object to me. This is a great undertaking. The payment? Your soul.
Okay there, Shang Tsung.
What?
What?
You must commit your soul to the dark side. Only then will you unleash the true power of making a quality poll to post on social media. Notice I didn't say X. X is way too dark, even for the dark side of the force.
So will I get to use a fourth option instead of other?
Always four there are. No more, no less. The other category is your fourth option.
But we always get people who cry and complain that their choice in the poll should have been listed as an option.
Do you always seek to appease those who fill your ears with high-pitched whinings that mimic tension-throwing children?
Damn, Darth! Keeping it real up in here. Okay. So what do I need to do to become a poll master?
Years of practice. And of course, shifts at a local strip club. There's a favorite of mine on Jakku. This hut.
Wait. Are you serious? Okay. Man, you get your legs cut off and turned into beef jerky and you lose your sense of humor. On second thought, I think we'll just stick with what we have. I'm not looking to have Sarlacc tentacles all over me at a Tatooine strip club. I'm gonna go see Obi-Wan and see what advice he has. I hear he might be taking a trip soon on the Millennium Falcon.
Damn, lost another one. Wait, did he just say Obi-Wan?
Well done, sir. Well done.
Seriously, I can't believe it took this long for somebody to do a Star Wars poll.
I was scrambling because I hadn't done one yet. And I was like, bam, all I got to do is write a script. I've got Darth Vader. Boom, got yourself a poll. Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP, our very important poll. If you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. Now, the question for this week was, who is your favorite snowman in video games? Coming in at third place was the Snow Golem from Minecraft at 10.7%. Sliding in between them in the number two spot was the Headless Snowman from Super Mario 64 at 20.2%. And taking the top spot this week with 47.6% was Mr. Frosty from Clay Fighters. Now, 21.4% of you said other, so let's take a look at some of the comments from the poll. At Jiswa Project says, Ice Bomb Kirby from Kirby 64. Quite literally a snowman ready to explode against enemies. A firecracker of icy doom, even. At Clayton Sire says, the one that you build yourself in Animal Crossing. Specifically the one from the DS with the bingo cards. At Brink of Gaming says, Glacial Golem from Dragon Quest. At Maverick Girl VG says, Rusty the Snowman from Earthworm Jim. And I'm today years old when I found out that there's a snowman in Earthworm Jim.
That his name is Rusty.
Yeah. Well, he breathes fire. He's in the hell level. Surely you spent a ton of time there.
I don't remember it. At Gaming and Gain says, the NES exclusive from TMNT2, the arcade game, Frosty the Hitman. Too cool for the arcade. Only featured on the Nintendo Entertainment System. Now you're playing with power.
I love that answer.
Yeah, I appreciate that pun as well. Too cool.
Absolutely. So based on the poll question this week, Blue, what was your choice?
I have to go with the Abominable Showman from Sackboy's Big Adventure. The Abominable Showman shows up in the level titled Ready, Yeti, Go, which is, of course, a icy Himalayan type themed level. And then towards the end, this giant abominable snowman, he's got a huge grin, like googly eyed grin on his face. He's just having a good time, enjoying the music, rolling down the mountain. And he doesn't realize that you're in the way and you're going to get squished if you don't run. So it's a nice little like auto scroller platforming section. It's really fun. And the Abominable Showman is super cute. So obviously that's my choice.
Obviously. Ryan, what about you? What's your answer for this week?
So normally I would say Mr. Frosty. That was like my initial gut reaction, but I started thinking about it. And there was a game back in the day on the PC. I think everyone played, cause I swear everybody knows about it, but Ski Free, where you would ski down the mountain.
Yes, right? Yep, yes.
Yep. And then every once in a while, this abominable snowman would come out. Looked kind of like a regular snowman, but obviously had like twig legs and twig arms, and he would just devour you. And I remember there like being an urban myth that you could defeat him in some way, but no, you cannot beat that guy. But I specifically remember the first time I ever played it, I was in a computer store. And I was like way back in the early 90s, and I'm playing the game like, oh, this is cool. Like what the fuck is that? So naturally, nostalgia and surprise factor and the fact that he is an unkillable boss makes him my favorite. So Abominable Snowman from Ski Free. Going with that one.
Very nice. Very nice.
Donnie, what about you?
My initial choice was going to be Mr. Frosty from Clay Fighter. When I first saw the word snowman and I attributed that to video games, I was like, there's not really a connection here. The only one I kind of remember was Mr. Frosty. But then I started thinking about it a little bit more and I realized that there is a snowman or snowmen in a game you might not have heard of called Secret of Mana for the Super Nintendo.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, there are a couple of snowmen, and I'm not sure if they're actually snowmen or if you can use an ice spell on them and they turn into snowmen. But I was like, Secret of Mana, that is one of my all-time favorite JRPGs, so I'm going to go with that one, even though a close second would be Mr. Frosty from Clay Fighter.
It's your all-time favorite JRPG, said the guy who doesn't even like JRPGs.
I used to like JRPGs back at Secret of Mana, Final Fantasy, Mystic Quest, Final Fantasy III, Final Fantasy II, all that stuff. I loved those. But now it's like RPGs just, what a time sink, man.
I mean, you're not wrong, but that's why Ryan loves them.
Correct. And I'm very disappointed in you.
I'll make it up to you, baby.
All right, so why don't we go ahead and shout out our patrons for the week.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. Ducks with Thick Thighs, Wizard of Zardoz, Bops and Dugnut, Loudmoth, Retro Blast Pat, Great Siamen 81, BNT Zilligai, The Mad Milkman, Johnny Boombots, Seven Kessel Forest, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnair, Doongie Forever, Ducks in Disguise, Don't Make Me Pull Over This Car, Games with Coffee, Hybrid Divide, Matto 1606, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, V Redox, PDX Family, including Shannon and Luke, Skull Azeel, Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blue Sick Voice Fan, Sassy Sony, Evo Lust, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retroman, Gametroid, Michael LeKite, Emo-esque, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Brews, and Fruitcakes Pickled Pepper. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
All right, so now it's time for our headlines. Our headline segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast, and each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Right now, they want to know, what games would you put in a four-slot Neo Geo MVS cabinet? Send your answers to email at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes.
Ooh, now are we talking strictly Neo Geo games?
I think it's the ones that were available on the MVS. So there are hundreds and hundreds of titles that you could get.
Absolutely. Metal Slug, Samurai Showdown, Fatal Fury, and King of Fighters, maybe?
Good choice.
Those were what I'm going with off the cuff.
Yep. So I actually specifically would go Metal Slug 3, Samurai Showdown 2, King of Fighters 98, and I'd probably say Neo Bomberman. I think that would be a good one to have.
Okay.
But I feel like I've got two fighting games, and I need to take one out, and I don't know what to put in this.
The only one that I might do would be like Magical Drop 3.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Gotta love me a puzzle game.
Of course.
From PC Gamer. The Game Awards will beef up security to prevent stage crashers this year. One of the more memorable moments in the 2022 Game Awards came courtesy of a kid who crashed From Software's acceptance of the Game of the Year award for Elden Ring. Don't expect something similar to happen in 2023, though, as TGA founder and host Jeff Keighley said during a recent Q&A livestream that we definitely have plans for better security at this year's event. Last year's stage crasher was a bizarre prankster. He thanked his reformed Orthodox rabbi, Bill Clinton, for the win, but ultimately harmless. I did not make that game. A similar disturbance interrupted Gamescom opening night live in August when two attendees rushed the stage and spoke into Keighley's microphone, Bill Clinton wants to play GTA 6, an apparent nod to the Game Awards stagecrasher. But the ease with which these people infiltrated two major gaming events laid bare the fact that someone who isn't harmless could do the same thing. Sadly, in this day and age, that's something organizers of public events like the Game Awards have to bear in mind. Yeah, we are, Keighley said when asked if security would be beefed up this year to prevent stage crashers. We don't want to talk about that stuff too publicly, just because it's security and we definitely have plans, and we're trying to do all we can to keep me safe. To keep me safe? Wow. But also everyone watching the show, in the audience, participating in the show, and everything. Why don't you just say everybody there safe?
Right. That sounds like a fuck up and a backpedal.
Nobody wants to see a ring of bouncers standing post around the Game Awards stage, unless they're cosplaying the underappreciated Square Enix beat-em-up and PS2 launch title The Bouncer, but there will no doubt be people keeping an eye on the audience, and particularly those heading up on stage, as the show unfolds to ensure nobody makes any untoward moves. I would imagine there will be quite a bit more scrutiny of who gets into the show, too, although that's a bit trickier as tickets to the event were available to the general public. The Game Awards 2023 takes place at 4:30 p.m. Pacific Time, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on December 7th, and will be live streamed on Twitch, YouTube, TikTok, and various other streaming and social media outlets. Now, I am all for a good prank. I think these are funny and in good.
I'm gonna let you finish.
It does make people laugh, but there is something to be said about the safety, because there could completely be somebody with nefarious intentions that comes in. That's the reality of where we live at now.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's something that can't be allowed to continue, which makes me sad. I'm going to be honest, because it's one of my favorite parts of watching the award shows over the years is watching the veins pop out of Jeff Keighley's head as he tries to maintain that fake smile while somebody is speaking into his mic about Bill Clinton. And I love it. I love watching Jeff Keighley try to keep his composure when that happens. But it isn't fair to the developers when their moment in the spotlight gets usurped by just some rando in the crowd who wanted a bit of internet attention. So that's not cool. And that's the part that needs to stop. But if we keep pestering Jeff Keighley, I mean, is it really so bad?
I'm going to play a little bit devil's advocate here, though. We're still talking about this particular award speech because somebody talked about Bill Clinton's rabbi. So there's a certain amount of exposure that happens when somebody crashes your acceptance speech. We're not having discussions about the acceptance speech for anyone else on any other time. So yes, it's unexpected and you don't want it to happen because you want to live in the limelight in that moment, but now it's memorable. But that being said, I get the whole security thing. And I'm honestly surprised that security was that lax at an award show like this. Mm-hmm. When Kanye gets up during the Grammys and interrupts somebody, it's freaking Kanye. You think they're going to tell him not to go up on the stage? But just some rando person that it just bought tickets to go there all of a sudden gets up on stage. I mean, this isn't like a punk rock show they're like, whatever.
To be fair.
To be fair.
If you're working security at the Game Awards, like, you've seen how the devs dress.
That's true.
So if somebody is just wandering on stage, how are you supposed to know that they're not meant to be there?
Just get like a Facebook that you open up. Right? nerd.
Well, and that's to that point. I mean, anybody from the crowd could mix in with a particular dev and just say like, hey, I worked on this game. You want to see my credentials? And then they get up on stage and next thing you know, it's effort right in the, whatever they say.
So I guess the real question is, are they beefing up security because they truly think it's a risk or just because Jeff got pissed off?
I think the latter. Yep.
We have to keep me safe, people.
Right.
Oh, we're never getting invited to the Game Awards ever.
Hey, Jeff, love you.
All right, next up from gamesindustry.biz, U.S. kids want game subscriptions and virtual currency more than games this Christmas. A report by the Entertainment Software Association has found that 72% of children in the U.S. want games-related products for Christmas, but only 22% have asked for physical games. Of the 500-plus children surveyed, aged 10 to 17, most are planning to ask for video game-related gifts for the holidays. Subscriptions were the most popular gift idea at 39%, followed closely by consoles, 38%, games accessories, 32%, and in-game currency at 29%. Surprisingly, only 22% of the children surveyed wanted physical games this Christmas. The ESA also surveyed more than 500 adults for this study, which found that 1 in 3 plan to buy video games for themselves or others, with 57% of parents considering buying video game-related presents for their children. Game-related products came out on top, beating other gift ideas such as money and gift cards at 70%, or technology like smartphones and smartwatches at 62%. Books were the lowest on the gift list at 26%. More than 212 million Americans play video games regularly, so it comes as no surprise that games are at the top of this year's wish list, said Stanley Pierre-Louis, ESA president and CEO. Whether a family is getting a new console, updating their controllers and headsets, or adding to their library with new games and expansion packs, we know video games are a great tool for families to play together and connect during the holiday season and beyond.
I feel like such an old curmudgeon right now.
I know. As I was reading this, it was the gif from Saving Private Ryan.
Just watching yourself grow older. Yeah.
The frown on your face the entire time.
Just want to get one thing out of the way. Who asked for books?
I do. Like half my list is books.
And my point is made. I'm not surprised by this. I got to be honest. I don't think kids are that interested in physical media. Very surprised that 22% of the kids want physical games. Most of them are interested in digital stuff. And the best way to get that nowadays is subscriptions. So I get it. I was surprised by game accessories, but I assume that's just like a beeped up controller.
Yeah, controller, headset, stuff like
that.
Yeah,
yeah. But the in-game currency is where I get mad. I'll need more V-Bucks, Dad.
All Donnie's lectures have fallen on deaf ears.
To other kids, they don't have me as their parent. My kids know better than to ask me for money for V-Bucks or anything for what other games that they play. Like if they wanted to buy something, let's just say Mortal Kombat 11, right? And they wanted to get an expansion pack or a character pack or something like that. I would be more inclined to do that because it's new fighters that actually do something in the game as opposed to just being a stupid skin that does absolutely nothing.
Although you can buy those character packs with the in-game currency.
It's like Vicky from iRobot, my logic is undeniable.
I don't like your logic, but I'll allow it.
I will say, though, I am surprised that money and gift cards are less than gaming-related products. That's a testament to the power of video gaming in our current timeline, if you will. And because money and gift cards have been on top for, I don't know, the last 40 years, 30 years, right? And now video games have taken their place. I like this. That gives us a reason to exist. Gamers Week podcast, you can thank us. Taking all the credit.
I guess the thing that I don't quite get is, how do you unwrap virtual currency under the tree or a digital game under the tree?
You make your own card and say, here's, and so you basically create your own cover art for that game, right? Or you print out the scan of the cover art, put it in an envelope and say, here, Merry Christmas, have them unwrap it. You got me a picture of a game?
That sounds like a lot of work, though.
It does. I would probably just take like a sticky note and put IOU V-Bucks on it. Yeah. Then put it in a giant box with like some rocks. So they think it's a giant thing.
Super and then heavy.
They have to dig through all the rocks to find the sticky note.
Or you do like the Russian doll thing where you just like one huge package and smaller and smaller and smaller.
Like, well, I got you exactly what you wanted. Yeah, but I feel bamboozled.
But you make a good point about the wanting the subscriptions and virtual currency more than actual cash, which with actual cash, you can buy said subscriptions and virtual currency.
And accessories.
But I guess, like, do kids do these days, do they have much exposure to cash?
That's a good question.
My kids do. We pay them their allowance whenever they do their chores. My son, during the spring and summer months, he cuts the grass. And whenever he does, he gets $20 for the front yard and the side yard, and then $20 for the backyard.
Donnie, are you willing to adopt a 38-year-old man?
Well, we do have extra room up here if you want to come up.
I'm moving right now. I'm packing my bags. All right, from Games Radar, shout out to the one single person that just bought a new Wii U, the first recorded in 17 months. All right, some beautiful sicko out there managed to acquire a brand new Wii U console at retail, the first time anyone has made such a purchase for the better part of a year and a half. One new Wii U was sold in the U.S. in September, first time a new Wii U sold since May of 2022. According to Matt Piscatella of the U.S. sales tracking group, Siracana, formerly as NPD. He also notes that the last time a new Vita unit sold was November of 2021, when three were purchased. I did that because there's two exclamation points.
Three!
Three!
If you're wondering just how many people can manage to track a single retail sale of a soon-to-be-forgotten video game console, well, that's just where Siracana is set up. Piscatella explains that we acquire and process individual store-level sales data for every SKU across most retailers, which combined account for about 97% of the hardware market. It does force us to use all of our fingers and toes. It's pretty easy to imagine the scenario where a new Wii U sale might suddenly happen. Maybe some retail worker discovered a long-forgotten console in the back of the storehouse, put it out on the shelf, and after weeks of begging for a new home like a sad puppy in a pet store, some kind soul fell in love with the machine and gave it a new home. Or hey, maybe there was just an inventory error and nobody actually bought a Wii U. But I want to believe, of course. Wii U consoles are pretty readily available on sites like eBay with dozens of units sold every single day. So it's not like the retail market is the only place you can pick up the console. And yes, you can now get most of the Wii U library on Switch. But then you won't get to play with a giant bulky touchscreen gamepad in your lap the whole time.
So which one of you did it? Which one of you got the Wii U?
I've already got a Wii U.
Yeah, me too.
Like you wouldn't buy another one if you saw one sitting on a store shelf, mint new.
I might, because right now the Wii U is actually selling for a lot more than I think it was at retail. I'll have to double check on that, but I know that they are a lot more expensive than you would expect them to be. So like a loose console is selling for $200, $300 at this point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, you might want to get one sealed and then call up WADA.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you also have to be careful about being bricked because it hasn't been updated.
That is very true.
That's true.
But when I throw it in an acrylic box and call up WADA, I don't have to care about that.
Right. So you just leave it sealed, put that sucker up on eBay, profit.
Profit. Instant profit.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine the person that did get something graded like that, like the Wii U, they have it sealed, they got it graded, and that thing is bricked. Like, you know, in the back of your mind, if you didn't pay attention to the news, and then you're like, oh, I've got to, and you go to try and sell that as an investment, like, oh, I want $200,000 for this. Like, hold on, is this factory sealed? Yes, it is. You do realize that since you didn't turn this on, it is dead. It's bricked. Say what again? And it's
like what again?
Yeah, say what again? It's only worth like $2.
Nonsense. You just don't mention anything. And the kind of collectors who buy that stuff, they leave it sealed. They don't buy it for the love of it. They buy it for the investment. So whatever person would buy that, they're not going to play it anyway. So it doesn't matter. What they don't know won't hurt them.
So I went on price charting to look up what a cost of a new console for the Wii U is.
Mm-hmm.
$674.45.
Dang.
That's price charting. Go check eBay. eBay sold.
I'm not going to do that. That's way too much time.
I have a lot of questions because it says the first Wii U sold in 17 months. So another one was sold 17 months ago.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which is still crazy. I have a lot of questions about that one as well.
But think about it. You were the last person to buy the Wii U, and then some asshole comes along and takes your title. So now you got to remove that from your profile on Twitter, you know, like sheepishly go, oh, okay, it's not me anymore.
So the Super Mario Maker Console Deluxe set for the Nintendo Wii U was sealed, just sold for buy it now of $224.
Okay.
That's not much.
It's not much. It's not terrible. But that doesn't – it really doesn't give me a – definitive answer as to what like the actual average price is, because there's only four results for the Wii U sealed console. So maybe I need to change up the wording on how I search for this.
Could be.
Or there's only four results because
that's true.
I mean, it is a Wii U we're talking about.
I'd like to know more about the story of where this sealed console was purchased from. What retailer had this just like, oh, look, we're going through inventory. Somebody actually decided to do their job for once, and they cleaned out this space like, oh, what's this? Holy crap, it's a sealed, brand new factory sealed Wii U. What do we do, assistant manager? Just put it out on the floor and see if somebody will buy it. And of course, they put it out there on the shelf, and like, so, lo and behold, some guy's walking the video game section. He's like, what's that? is this a joke? Like, no, this is, we found it in the back. I'll take it.
And the clouds open up. The seraphim are singing. All right, so why don't we take a look at our top three new releases this week? That sounds like a canned sound effect burp.
Yeah, I have a side hustle as doing sound effects.
Well, anything that pays the bills.
Yeah, 20 bucks.
20 bucks is 20 bucks.
Yep. You would be very popular on the fart book.
Gangs of Sherwood, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PC. Fight the armies of the Sheriff of Nottingham and lead the rebellion, solo or in co-op with up to 4 players. Play as one of the Merry Men. Combine your attacks and free the people in this futuristic dystopia inspired by the legend of Robin Hood. Dragon Quest Monsters, The Dark Prince. On the Switch. Become the master of monster kind. Sorrow is cursed and is unable to harm anything with monster blood. Now he must become a monster wrangler to create an army for battle. The key to Sorrow's success lies with synthesis, the ability to combine two monsters and create a stronger offspring. Huh? Each new creation brings Sorrow one step closer to his goal of becoming the master of monster kind.
Daddy, what are you doing to mommy? Oh, it's called synthesis.
Later, want to come to my house and synthesize?
Netflix and synthesis?
Turok 3 Shadow of Oblivion Remastered. PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Finish the hunt in this epic finale to the Turok trilogy. Pick up immediately after the events of Turok 2 Seeds of Evil, with dual protagonists Joseph and Danielle Fireseed of the Turok family tree, as they battle the titular antagonist Oblivion and its followers, the Flesh Eaters. So based on these lovely descriptions for this week, Ryan, which game is your choice?
So Dragon Quest Monsters, I've never got into those type of games. I love Dragon Quest, the actual RPG, but just the Monsters games, it's never been a thing for me. So I will pass on that. I have admittedly never played a Turok game.
Okay.
I know.
Okay.
They came out on the N64. I know. So no surprises there. But I've always been enamored with the Robin Hood lore and the stories and stuff. I think that's a really cool subset of kind of medieval England. And it sounds like it would be kind of fun, right? You can play as the Merry Men. You're not necessarily have to play as Robin Hood, which I think is kind of cool. You mix it up with 4 other people. You take down the Sheriff of Nottingham. I think that would be super fun. So all things considered, probably Gangs of Sherwood. Probably going to be my choice this week.
Very nice. Blue, what about you? What are you picking?
Well, I'm also going to go ahead and pass over Turok 3 because I just don't have any nostalgia for 64 games. So moving on to, I know, gasp, shock. Moving on to Dragon Quest Monsters, The Dark Prince. This is like Dragon Quest meets Monster Hunter meets Chocobo Breeding. That just seems a little not up my alley, so I'll probably pass on that one as well. But like Ryan, Gangs of Sherwood is something that looks really, really fun. Now, first, when I watched the trailer for this, it starts with a close-up on like this terrifying jester guy with full right. clown makeup, and I was like, oh my god, I don't want to watch this anymore.
Kefka?
kind of. It's very much a Kefka vibe. But if you can get past that guy and watch the gameplay, it looks exactly like the kind of action RPG type gameplay that I really enjoy. I'm not so much into the co-op, so the thing that concerns me a little bit is how well the game plays solo, or if you're really just handicapped the entire way and just can't do anything. So if it truly is a good solo experience, this is something I would be super interested in.
Excellent.
Donnie, what are you going in?
I'm pretty much the same boat. Turok, I played the original Turok just briefly, but as you well know, with it being on the N64, the graphics sucked. It was just really hard to discern anything. You couldn't make anything out, so it got a little bit confusing. Now, the graphics did get a little bit better subsequently with the release of 2 and 3, but looking at Turok 3, it looks like just a polished version of an N64 game. So,
the N64 sucks podcast.
Pretty much. So I don't think I'll be picking up Turok 3. There's really no sense of nostalgia for me with that series. I never really got into it that much. Coming up to Dragon Quest, I'm not a big RPG guy anyway. I still have an RPG game that I'm trying to get through, which is Sea of Stars. I don't need another one taking up my time, which leads to Gangs of Sherwood. Now, like Blue said, when you first started watching the trailer, you get this jester-esque figure, and I'm like, okay, that's kind of interesting. But he's not part of the gameplay. I want to see the gameplay. And then I start looking at the gameplay, and it's just like everything else. It's like God of War. It's like Arkham Asylum with the battle mechanic. And what is this game going to have that's really going to catch my attention and really hold my interest while playing the game? And quite frankly, I don't know if it has that. So
it does have men in tights.
Yeah, we've seen your Pornhub history. We know that holds your attention.
Damn it. All right, now it's time for our main topic.
All right, from VentureBeat, cinematic and gaming universes will continue to collide in 2024, Deloitte prediction. Cinematic and interactive game universes will continue to collide in 2024 as game companies and film studios redefine storytelling, according to consulting firm Deloitte. The fusion of video games and film and TV franchises is paving the way for immersive narratives and expanded intellectual properties, Deloitte said. The consulting firm said the landscape of storytelling is undergoing a monumental shift, driven by changing demographics, innovative technologies, and a quest for robust IP. The convergence of film, TV, and video games is reshaping entertainment, blurring the boundaries between cinematic and game world universes. This year marked a turning point as major film and TV franchises originated from video games and vice versa. The Super Mario Bros. Movie generated $1.36 billion at the global box office, and Nintendo said it boosted sales of Mario games. More than 169 million people saw the film, Nintendo said. And The Last of Us, an adaptation of Sony and Naughty Dog's hit game series, was a hit on Max, formerly HBO. Five Nights at Freddy's also generated more than $283 million at the global box office.
The rising popularity of video games has led Hollywood to seek new IPs for expansion and monetization. While game companies are exploring collaborations with TV and film to leverage their intellectual properties and offset soaring development costs. The adaptation of the games into films and TV series is not new, but the scale and financial success of these adaptations has seen a significant upsurge in recent years. Younger generations, particularly engaged with gaming, drive substantial revenues for leading game franchises, captivating Hollywood's attention for potential new IPs. Yet Strauss Zelnick, CEO of Take-Two Interactive, said in a recent analyst calls that he thinks that the video game business is much easier and better and more profitable than films, despite the challenges of running hit-driven video game businesses. So he isn't sold on the idea that everything will succeed. But his company has also licensed BioShock and Borderlands to be made into films. The post-pandemic resurgence of theater attendance has set the stage for an influx of TV shows and movie based on video games, promising an era where the share of theatrical box office revenues from video game IPs is projected to double by 2025. Streaming platforms are anticipated to embrace shows centered around gaming themes, further propelling the trend. The symbolic relationship between cinematic universes and game worlds is intensifying with seamless integration of actors, storylines, and promotions across the mediums. Successful crossovers not only generate direct revenues, but elevate the overall value of the franchise, creating a virtuous cycle where game IPs drive box office revenues and vice versa.
Central to these triumphs are impassioned fan communities that bolster the endurance of these narratives. Fans contribute to the durability of franchises by actively engaging across various media, from TV and film to gaming and social platforms, fostering an ecosystem that spans generations. The ascent of video games in entertainment mirrors generational shifts in media consumption. Millennials and Gen Z, seeking multifaceted engagement, allocate significant entertainment hours to social media and gaming. Gaming narratives, often immersive and extensive, create devoted fan bases invested in interactive storytelling. However, success hinges on respecting the core essence that makes a franchise compelling. catering to both loyal fans and newer audiences. Studios must tread carefully to maintain the franchise's integrity while exploring new storytelling avenues across games, TV, and film. While games offer IPs for TV and film adaptations, these adaptations tap into fervent fan bases, enabling greater engagement and monetization. Yet studios must stay true to the franchise's uniqueness while navigating the challenges of transitioning between mediums, Deloitte said. Studios stand to benefit from strategic collaborations and optimized production methods to curate diverse experiences within a story universe. Ultimately, the enduring value of a franchise lies in the authenticity of its narratives and the passionate communities it engenders. Studios must preserve the essence that makes their stories unique while embracing flexibility to cater to evolving audience preferences across media.
And you guys see there it said millennial and Gen Z, so you old guys.
We don't mean
but our earning power is still strong.
We swear.
We're not at the old folks' home yet.
Not just yet. I'm all for so many different IPs to come to life. So many video game IPs to come to life on the big screen, on television, what have you, as long as they're done well. And I feel like with the advancement in technology, as opposed to what we had in the 80s and the 90s, a lot of these different IPs can thrive and survive. But not only that, a lot of them don't even need heavy cinematics to be successful or CGI to be successful.
I think one of the things that you'll see, or that you're seeing with the IPs that are out nowadays, is that they're already kind of cinematic in how the game plays itself. And a lot of that is that these games have been influenced by movies from the past and how storytelling is done in those movies. Now, granted, it's an interactive media, so you get to decide what the outcomes are going to be and how you do that. But with that in mind, it's not surprising to me that the recent flood of video game-based movies has been successful because they've figured out, hey, there's a formula that we can use in order to make this an actual movie. If you look at like Street Fighter and the original Super Mario Brothers movie, they didn't know what to do with it. There wasn't a whole lot to those games.
Or like, right.
I don't know. We got to make up 90% of the story here. And it's in the example with Street Fighter was like, how many characters can we push into this? So with that kind of push towards more advanced games, better technology behind them, and then better cinematic. And it really just, it's the people that are growing up now making movies also more than likely played video games when that was coming through. So they already have an understanding of what gaming is and gaming culture is. So it's not surprising to me that they've taken the helm and done pretty good things with these IPs.
As opposed to those directors of the 80s and 90s who probably have never touched a video game, or if they did, it might've been like Pac-Man a long time ago.
Sure.
So there really is no connection to them and the video game world.
Right. And when you don't have that connection, there's no desire to be a good steward to the original intellectual property.
Absolutely.
Right.
I still don't think there's very much desire to be a good steward of the intellectual property. You know. I think that they just fear the wrath of the fan base if they happen to get it wrong, a la original Sonic movie poster.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Because this is about making money ultimately. So
it is. It's 100% about making money. And, you know, when you think about cinematic universes, they seem like a common thing now. But back when Marvel was doing it, 20 years ago, whenever that was, it really hadn't been done before. And when you think about how much time and money and effort and pre-planning went into how they executed it and were so absurdly successful with it, it's no surprise that now everybody thinks they need their own. But also the lesson to be learned is, well, look at where Marvel is now.
Right, right.
It's kind of a shadow of its former self. People are bored of it. The movies are not a thing anymore. So it's not the golden goose, right? It's not just going to keep giving and giving and giving. You need to know both how to get the most out of the IP, be true to the IP, give the fans what they want, and then get out when you need to.
Know when to hold them. Know when to fold them.
Yeah, something like that.
Know when to walk away. Know when to run. And I agree with that statement. It seemed like the Marvel movies were just separate. It was totally saturated. They were making movies about anything and everything. You had IPs like the Eternals that were being made. You had Miss Marvel and some other things that came out, like Shang-Chi, which was a decent movie, but it's not a very... it's not as widely known as, let's just say, Thor or Captain America or Iron Man of the Avengers or, hell, even the X-Men. So I will agree with you that you can't sit there and continue to saturate the market with all of these different movies just because they were successful, because people are going to get tired of them and they're going to want something else. So in this case with video game movies, what happens now that you've got several successful movies? They're talking about making the Link movie, which Machine Gun Kelly wants to play Link. You can F right off. Yeah. So what happens now that you have these successful game franchises like Link and Super Mario and Castlevania? You know, they have a successful animated series with that. But what happens when they decide to make a movie about Mega Man or Contra or whatever? At what point does it start to get so saturated that gamers just get a little fed up with it? Never? Right. Maybe. I don't know.
No, I think there will definitely be an end point, and it will mirror what you described with Marvel, where they'll start out with the big franchises, and as those kind of peter out and they run out of stuff to do with them, then they'll start digging for the less well-known franchises. But then everybody's going, well, am I going to go see the Snow Brothers movie? I'm probably not. So
I will say, though, there was one exception, of course, with Guardians of the Galaxy. Nobody knew what that was, and that was a mega hit, and I think that actually probably pushed a lot of the Marvel universe going into some of the more obscure pieces of that, because Guardians of the Galaxy was just such a mega success. They're like, oh man, all of our IPs are gonna work now.
Right. Well, yeah, okay. No, that's a good point, because every once in a while you do have the one-off that says, okay, we can do this, but failing to realize why the one worked,
right,
and being able to replicate it. Like, those are the two things.
And then the Mario Brothers movie figured it out and they cast Chris Pratt.
Right. Because again, it's not about the IP, it's about the money.
Do you think, though, that by creating all of these IPs and making movies off of them, is that going to have a hindrance on video games, or is that just, it's a foolhardy thing done by Hollywood and we as gamers should enjoy the IPs that we want to go see and then not really care if they, you know, are successful or not?
I think it sours the IP a little bit. Okay. If they make a movie or series and it just totally flops. Case in point, the original Mario Brothers movie, when it came out, it had nothing to do with what people knew of Mario. So it's just like, okay, it flopped. Do we really, like, no, we shouldn't try another series. We shouldn't try another another television show. We shouldn't try another movie. It was bad. And that's going to leave a bad taste in people's mouths for years to come until they ultimately decide to try and right the ship and fix it.
I mean, we were talking about it when the new Mario Brothers movie was announced. We were like, is this going to be? So I could see your point there.
Yeah. But then also there's this kind of this weird dynamic happening. Like, it also came out this week that the new Sonic game, which came out the same time as Mario Wonder, shockingly kind of got its butt handed to it in sales because it decided to go head to head with Mario, the biggest Mario game of the year, and lost. And Sega is saying that, well, when the new Sonic movie comes out, that should help sales of the game.
Which it might.
It probably will, but it seems to be like this bizarro world where the movies are selling the games instead of the games are selling the movies.
And I think in Sonic's case, that's probably true, because I think the people who are buying Sonic are probably more the nostalgia crowd. They're the ones who are investing in it, where everybody is buying a Mario game.
I guess, but if you had a little kid who wanted to go see Sonic in the theaters 37 times, when the new Sonic comes out, why is the little kid not going to ask for it?
I don't know the response to that.
Well said. Well said.
And earlier you said something about the movies helping sell the games and not the games helping sell the movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
wasn't that with the toys of the movies that came out like in the 80s and the 90s, where they specifically manufactured toys for the movie and the movie helped sell the toys?
And it used to be that the movies became games. Like, there's a Dirty Harry game on the NES.
Yeah, there is.
RoboCop, all these R-rated movies that are on the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Predator? They have a Predator
they
game.
They do. Oh, yes. It's so good. It's so good. Arnold Schwarzenegger in pink.
You're a girly man.
If Jason can be in fuchsia, why can't Arnold be in pink?
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, ultimately, when I saw this headline, cinematic and gaming universes will continue to collide in 2024, I was like, and this is news. Why? I'm pretty sure anybody who's been like had half an eye on pop culture could have told you this.
Of course. If you have successful things happening in this particular realm, it's going to continue to happen until the money just stops. And even in Marvel's case, it's still not going away. They still have successful IPs now, even to this day, that are still rocking, like the Loki series. Mm-hmm. We just finished that, the series two, and it was great. Like, we, as a family, we loved it. We loved watching the series. And Loki is, you know, not really a I wouldn't say popular character, but he's not as popular as some of the main antagonists or protagonists in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it worked because they picked the right actor and they had the right content and what have you. So,
yeah, I was going to say, I think Tom Hiddleston is probably one of the drawing factors for
a certain subset
of people who are watching Loki. I mean, that's probably true of every movie that you go to see. If it's got the actors you like, you're probably going to see it. So, but once it gets to the point where that money dries out, you're not going to be able to draw in big name actors anymore.
And the one good thing about comic book movies is the fact that there are so many different storylines that you could pull from. And that's one of the things that I kind of thought of whenever they first started making these comic book movies all the way back in 97 with Blade. Mm-hmm. I was like, whoa, this is like, they take this one particular storyline and there's dozens and dozens and dozens that they can choose from. Now, case in point, you're going to get to that point where it's going to get saturated. Like, oh, what's going on with this? Like, what's happened? Like, why is this a new movie with him doing this? It's like, oh, because it's a new Spider-Man that's doing in this timeline. And then at that point, it's going to be like, oh yeah, I just don't care anymore.
Yeah. It becomes confusing. And then it makes you feel like if you missed a movie, then you can't see the new one.
Right.
I agree with that. But to that point, video games as well have a lot of content to draw from. And the beauty of it is that it's popular, so you'll continue to get new content if it's not just all created by AI. But the point being is that because it's still a hot marketplace, more than likely you're going to see video games that come out, and then less than a year later, there's going to be a movie that comes out with it.
Right. Back to the 80s and 90s where the licensed IP game was ready to go, like at the same time the movie was going to be out.
Yeah,
exactly. But that's a gamble, isn't it? Think about it. If you hit them, if either one of those things flops, you're in big trouble from a financial standpoint.
Well, they could do it back then because games cost a fraction as much to produce. And you would just pick like some old game that a studio had sitting around not released, and then you'd slap the IP on top of it and go, yeah, there, that's Beetlejuice.
LJN was so good at that.
Oh, right. Yes, they were. You said their name. They're going to appear and make a new game.
I didn't say it three times into a mirror. I think we're good. All right, before we move on, let's go ahead and take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by A Gamer Looks at 40 Podcast. The show explores the history of video games through the stories and experience of the everyday people who lived it. The podcast is currently on hiatus, but there are 90 episodes in the backlog ready to be explored. This week, Bill recommends episode 49, The Search for the Nintendo Power Grand Prize Winner. In this episode, Bill tells the story of Johnny Esposito, who in the fall of 1989 won the grand prize, a trip to the set of RoboCop 2. Yes. This week's question is, what was your video game magazine of choice as a kid?
Let Bill know your answer by sending him a tweet at agamerlooksat4040 on Twitter.
Hustler, hands down.
That was your video game magazine, huh?
Yeah. Lots of joystick moving.
Yeah, the video game reviews in the back, man. You read them for the articles, right?
Totally. Man, my parents would never let me subscribe to one of these in a million years. So any game magazine that I could get my hands on, that was great.
But which one did you primarily get your hands on?
Man, I don't even remember. Like if I went to a friend's house and they had one laying around or grabbing one out of the checkout at the grocery store just to flip through before I had to put it back so we could go.
I just can imagine you having your bedroom and like your parents going through like it's Shawshank Redemption looking for contraband.
The toss of the cells. The toss of the cells. What is this filth? It's Nintendo Power.
Now I'm playing with power, Dad. The hell you are. I will say Nintendo Power, hands down for me, was my video game magazine of choice as a kid, for sure.
When I was younger, yes, my grandparents actually had a subscription to Nintendo Power. So every time we went over there, which was like every week, well, we shared it amongst like several different cousins. So
still,
we got to have that. Plus, there's like other couple of magazines that they got. But as I got older, it was Game Pro and Electronic Gaming Monthly.
Yeah.
And mainly because me and my friend, I'd stay the night at his house or he'd stay the night at my house. And one of our favorite things to do was draw. And we would draw stuff that we would see in those magazines. So I have a deep affinity for Game Pro and Electronic Gaming Monthly.
Very, very cool. I love that story, too. That's awesome.
No, thank you.
What I thought you were going to say is, and then as I got older, it was Hustler.
Well, that's always been a pivotal magazine in my repertoire, along with Club and Swank.
My friend and I, we used to draw what we'd see in the magazines.
All right, thank you for coming, student. Please take your seat. Welcome back to Professor Rybrand's Nostalgia 101. And this time, it's time to pour yourself a cup of hot chocolate, snuggle up to a warm blanket with your favorite comfy clothes as we travel back to the 80s and 90s, discuss some truly nostalgic holiday commercials. Holiday commercials, of course, are an excellent way for advertisers to capture our imagination on that perfect morning with family and friends huddled around, sharing gifts and celebrating this time of year. But there are a few that stand out above the rest and stick in our minds, taking us back every time we think of them. Now, here are just a few examples of some holiday commercials that make me nostalgic.
Best part of waking up.
It's a finger in your butt.
I mean, sometimes.
All right, so our first commercial is going to be Folgers from 1986. Peter comes home for Christmas.
Peter!
Merry Christmas.
Everyone, please.
I know how to wake him up. Come on.
Oh, you're home.
I missed you, Mom.
How you doing, Peter?
Best wishes for this and all your mornings from Folgers.
Peter!
Now replace the coffee brewing in the morning with Peter taking a huge dump in the bathroom and not turning the fan on. You get a totally different reaction from everybody waking
they,
up.
They all wake up, though. All right, so Peter Comes Home for Christmas was a commercial from 1986, and as the story unfolds, and by the way, I used ChatGPT to come up with a description for these. I was like, this should be fun. Let's see what ChatGPT has to say. So it says, the story unfolds on a wintry morning. The scene opens with a sleepy household awakening to the sound of brewing coffee, a welcoming aroma filling the air. Peter, the oldest son, returns home unexpectedly for the holidays, arriving before dawn. As Peter quietly enters the house, his family remains asleep, unaware of his presence. He tiptoes through the familiar rooms, stealthily making his way to the tree with presents. There, his younger sister catches sight of him, and with uncontainable joy, rushes to greet him. And she informs Peter everyone is asleep, but Peter knows brewing a cup of coffee from Folgers will wake the whole house. The aroma fills the air and awakens his family, who rush down to share in the surprise and delight of Peter's unannounced return. Amid the joyous chaos and the aroma of Folgers coffee brewing in the background adds warmth to the moment, the commercial beautifully captures the essence of family love and the magic of being reunited during the holiday season. It's a touching portrayal of the simple pleasures and emotional connection that make Christmas memorable.
Damn, ChatGPT.
Yeah, I know, that right? Took longer to read than just to watch the damn thing.
So I like this one in particular because it actually has some nostalgia for me in a different way, not just with the commercial itself, but that's how I knew that it was okay to come down the stairs during Christmas. So my parents would say, you got to wait at the top of the stairs until we're done brewing coffee. So we would sit there and you'd hear the coffee brewing. Mm-hmm. And then once you got the smell, right, you knew it was good to go and that we could come downstairs and open our presents. So I always liked this one.
That's nice. I like that story.
Yeah.
But can I just say one thing?
Sure.
Did Peter have a key to the house? He kind of walked in willy-nilly. So are these people living in such an affluent neighborhood that they don't have to lock their doors?
It was the 80s. Everybody left their doors unlocked. That's how sitcoms, you know, everybody just walks in.
Of course. That's how the annoying neighbor just walks in.
Right.
All right. Next up is the Coca-Cola Holidays Are Coming commercial.
Holidays are coming. Holidays are coming.
'Tis the season.
Watch out.
Holidays.
Look around.
Holidays.
Something's coming. Coming to town.
Coming to your town.
Always Coca-Cola.
The urge to make dirty jokes is just
Who's Holiday?
That is a stripper name.
I don't remember this one as much as I remember the Folgers one.
That's my first time seeing that one, honestly.
Okay. Really? This to me was like an earworm. It came out in 1995, and the holidays are coming, holidays are coming, always Coca-Cola. That definitely stuck with me. In fact, they repurposed this one later on when the Santa packs of Coca-Cola were coming out. So okay. Instead of the holidays are coming, it was Santa packs are coming, Santa packs are coming. But ChatGPT says about this commercial that it's a festive spectacle that encapsulates the spirit of Christmas. It showcases a majestic Coca-Cola truck, brightly lit landscape set against a backdrop of snow-covered streets and charming houses. The truck becomes a beacon of holiday cheer. Its twinkling lights create a warm and inviting glow, invoking a sense of wonder and anticipation. Accompanying the visual delight is the cheerful and infectious melody of Holidays Are Coming by Mark Hall. It actually has the guy who wrote
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The catchy tune adds an extra layer of joy and nostalgia, becoming almost synonymous with the arrival of Christmas.
Holidays are coming. Holidays are coming.
I guarantee Mark wrote that from a strip club.
Can we get Holiday to the stage? Holiday.
Guys, I need something quick. All right. Next one is the Hershey Kisses Christmas Bell commercial. Originally released in 1989.
Classic.
Classic, yeah, I know that one. It's timeless, so you could run it year after year after year. And the best part is it's short. That's the best part.
Right. It's like, what, like 17 seconds, 15 seconds?
Something like that. It's like, you know what? I will buy some Hershey Kisses. Thank you.
I think if I remember right, I've actually seen this on TV this year.
Why not? It could be from any year.
Right. It's timeless simple. And it's easy. Yeah. Yep. It doesn't have like, you know, Scott Baio in it or something.
Right.
So the Hershey Kisses commercial from 1989 is a heartwarming and whimsical scene unfolds. I don't know if that's true. Against a festive backdrop, the ad features a set of Hershey Kisses arranged in the shape of a choir, each foil-wrapped candy bearing a white paper strip.
like it's a Hershey's kiss, resembling a ringing bell. The ad begins. The kisses are positioned on a bright red background and familiar holiday tune. We Wish You Merry Christmas starts playing. Each kiss bell begins to chime to the melody, producing a series of cheerful ding-dongs as they sway and tilt in harmony. The synchronization of the sweet bells results in a delightful performance of the beloved Christmas carol. I like this because of the last bell goes and then sits down and goes, whew. I think we've all been there. All right, next up is the M&M's Faint commercial from 1996.
Ow! So you think Santa will like these red and green M&Ms?
I don't know. I never met the guy. He does exist!
They do exist.
Santa?
Now, you know what's funny is I saw this still airing this weekend during NFL games.
Yeah. I was just getting ready to say, I've seen this one on television this year.
That's crazy that they continue to use it. Again, it's timeless. It works. And it's funny. It's actually kind of funny, right?
It is funny. It's a little dated, however. I mean, I notice that the animation isn't as crisp and clear as something is today. But again, it still holds up.
For sure.
So we need an M&M's remaster commercial is what you're saying.
No, don't touch it. Don't touch it.
Get a new actor like Randy Quaid.
Or Chris Pratt.
Or Chris Pratt. There you go.
Oh, God. Chris Pratt plays Santa and voices both the M&M's.
So according to ChatGPT, the red and yellow M&M characters have an unforgettable encounter with Santa Claus. The ad unfolds in a cozy living room adorned with holiday decorations. As Santa enters, red and yellow are incredulous, realizing that Santa is indeed real. Overwhelmed by the revelation, that simultaneous gasp and faint, astonished by the presence of the iconic figure, amidst the shock, Santa quips, "They do exist." The scene unfolds comically and with red and yellow characters, normally full of wit and mischief, completely stunned by the unexpected meeting. The commercial brilliantly captures the whimsy and magic of the holiday season, blending humor and enchantment of childhood wonder. It's a playful reminder of the joyous disbelief that the holiday spirit can bring, leaving viewers with a sense of merriment and nostalgia. I don't know if all of that is true.
I don't think so. And again, ChatGPT, just a little bit long-winded, isn't it?
Just a little bit, yes.
A little bit long-winded, but my God, are these... It doesn't sound like a computer wrote it.
It sounds like the friend that's just like way too positive all the time.
Right, yeah, exactly.
It just sounds like ad copy is what it sounds like.
Pretty much, true. Yeah. All right, and here's our last one, the McDonald's Runaway Girl commercial.
Hi, Lindsay.
Oh, hi, Lalo.
What's new?
Nothing. Everybody says I'm too little.
Really?
I'm thinking of running away to McDonaldland.
McDonaldland? That's where I'm from.
Yeah, I hear it's really nice.
I hear where you're from is really nice, too.
It's okay.
Yeah, because you've got that basketball hoop over your garage and your back porch. It has that great wind chime.
I made that at summer camp.
Plus, there's that beautiful field
where I chase butterflies.
Hey, when you're in McDonaldland, who's going to make the decorations for your dad's birthday party? Who's going to be the snowflake in the school play?
Ronald.
Who's going to feed Mr. Goldfish?
Hey, Ronald, I think I hear my mom calling me.
Oh, okay. Bye, Lindsay.
Is anyone else concerned by how Ronald knew all that?
Yes, I was just going to say that. Ronald's a creeper.
He's been staring outside.
He sees you when you're sleeping and knows when you're awake.
Ronald Santa Claus, you are not.
Yeah, Ronald is it.
He's just a more jovial it who sells cheeseburgers.
He kills you slowly with diabetes.
So no less sinister.
All right. So lastly, The McDonald's Runaway Girl commercial, a young girl bundled up for the winter unexpectedly encounters Ronald McDonald crafting a snowman in their neighborhood at night. Expressing her intention to run away and move to McDonaldland, she confides in the clown. Ronald, still sculpting the snowman's head, gently enlightens her about the wonderful aspects of her current home life she'd miss. He shares various examples, highlighting the joys and comforts of staying home. As Ronald continues, the girl, slightly overwhelmed, interjects with the timeless excuse, "I think my mom is calling me," a familiar escape tactic for children. Ronald bids her well, Ronald bids her well, understanding her sentiment as she decides to head back home. The blend of Ronald's enthusiasm and heartfelt sentiments as he tries to dissuade the girl from running away, coupled with her innocent attempt to politely exit the conversation, renders this commercial a heartwarming holiday classic.
Run for your life, bitch. Get some help.
Well, I mean, there's a weirdo dressed as a clown building snowmen in the middle of your neighborhood at night. So
tread lightly.
All right, though, to wrap things up, these are some of my favorites, but I'm sure there are plenty that I've missed that are on your list. So please add us at @GamersWeekPC on Twitter to let us know what your favorites are, and bonus points if you can send us a link. So thank you for attending today's Nostalgia 101. Just a reminder, if you have ideas for a story or a topic you'd like to hear, send us a message at GamersWeekPodcast@gmail.com, and we might feature your suggestion. Well, why don't we go ahead and wrap things up? Thank you all for listening to episode 99 of Gamers Week Podcast, and a big thank you to Retro Game Club Podcast, Love Retro BTW, and A Gamer Looks at 40 Podcast for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. And if you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at @GamersWeekPC, email us at GamersWeekPodcast@gmail.com, visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com, or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. And join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And finally, since you made it all the way to the end of the episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice.
Did you ever see the parody commercial to the Folgers one?
No, but tell me about it.
It's basically the guy comes home and the sister comes downstairs and then they start making out.
Lovely.
No, somehow I missed that. Right?
Was that on Pornhub as well?
Yeah, I was saying, tell us more about your Pornhub searches.
I swear it's on YouTube. Let me find it.
All right. So that'll be something that we could put in our patron-only Discord. So if you want to see this weird-ass commercial, join us on Patreon. And on that note, have a good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Holidays are coming, holidays are coming, oh, it's Coca-Cola.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like,
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your dick fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.